fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
Winter's over and the snow is gone. Go get your gloves and pull your work boots on. Gotta clear that patch, pick them stones. You know the sun is gonna warm those lazy bones. Winter's over and the work's just starting. Time to get busy in the family.
It's that time again. Memorial Day weekend is upon us. Winter is still a fresh memory, and it's time to work in the yard and the family garden and listen to the Route 51 Annual Garden Show. I'm Glenn Moberg, and as we do every year at this time, we'll be taking your phone calls live on the air with advice that's geared just for our often unforgiving northern Wisconsin climate.
Spring rain and a summer breeze. Yellow squash, black-eyed peas, Japanese kale and pinto beans, Italian tomatoes and turnip greens. Now we're picking and a-canning and working hard and trying to beat the winter to the family.
And joining us again this year, we have two Portage County Master Gardener volunteers, Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane, to give you tailor-made advice for an area where frost comes late in May and early in September, and the winters are marked by deep snowdrifts and temperatures that can drop to 30 below. Nick Schultz writes the Perpetual Gardener column for the Portage County Gazette. Lynn Kane is an orchard owner who sits on the Wisconsin Master Gardener Association board and who served previously as the summer horticulturist for Portage County UW Extension. They are both here for the rest of the hour to answer your questions about gardening and horticulture in the frozen tundra. Now, we've got wide open phone lines right now, and if you've got gardening or landscaping questions, you'll find it easier to get through on this show than on Larry Mueller's show, his garden talk show with its statewide audience. So look at this as being kind of Larry Mueller's garden talk, but just for the northern half of the state. And the show does work better when you call in. Our lines are wide open right now. You can reach us toll-free at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Or you can put a question on the Route 51 Facebook page, and I will read it on the air. And once again, those phone lines are wide open. If you've got a question about what plants to put in your garden or any problems you've been having with your trees or shrubs or pruning questions, you can get through right now. 1-800-780-9742. What exactly is a master garden volunteer, Nick Schultz?
Master gardeners, good morning, everyone. Master gardener volunteers are trained volunteers through the UW Extension. They're in every county of the state and really around the country. We take initially 36 hours of training and then make a commitment to volunteer time back for education, community service, and helping our communities learn more about horticulture.
What kind of training do you have to go through?
We learn, and we just finished a class in Portage County in the last month or so. We learn about bugs and soil and diseases, and the most fun class, of course, is the one with the perennials and the flowers. But we're also learning about the things that people tend to have questions about, the bugs and the diseases, fruits, vegetables. It's usually a 12-week program.
And Lynn Kane, you're on the Wisconsin Master Gardeners Association board. What exactly is that?
That is a group where each county has a representative who's a master gardener volunteer, and they get together and discuss common issues. They share information. We also have a representative at the extension, so they disseminate information to us, and then we can give it to our group. So it's a lot of it is a sharing group that gets together. We work together for the common good of the whole state, And it just gives you a picture then of not just your county, but what is also going on in other counties.
And you also spent several years as a summer horticulturist for Portage County UW Extension.
Yes. And that you work at the Extension office. You basically do what we're doing today. You have people call you. I used to write an article for the paper as well to get information out about current topics, what was going on, if there was an invasive issue at that time, if there was a disease coming through, if there it was a bad year for, you know, whatever the issues were, we could get that out to the public and help to educate them.
And as I'm sure most of our listeners know, Wisconsin Public Radio is also a part of UW Extension, and this is all tied in with the Wisconsin Idea, which is taking the knowledge of the University of Wisconsin system and spreading it beyond the campus borders so that everybody can access it. You've got an orchard too, Lynn Kane.
Yes, our orchard is in Marinette County, which so then you're talking almost zone three. It's very cold up there. And so we grow apples that actually it was an abandoned orchard. So these are heirloom apples that were grown by a woman who started her own orchard. And so a lot of them we don't even know what they are, but they can take that climate up in the northern areas. So as the trees start to die back, we've been grafting them to new rootstock to save the heirloom genetics and keep the orchard going.
Are you selling any of those trees? It seems like some, you know, a lot of people might want that stock.
We actually, what we did this year for the first time is we went to one of the other counties and we taught people how to graft trees. And then we got the same question. They said, well, we'd kind of like some of these heirlooms, but all we can tell them is this is a yellow apple or this is a red apple or this is a good apple for applesauce. We have no idea what they are. So it makes it difficult to sell things that you don't know.
Create your own
right.
name.
We do. We have. We have. It's kind of fun. You know, you can.
You know, Lynn points out something that is so important when you're buying plants, and that is to choose things that have been raised in our climate. There are places that sell, particularly some of the big box stores that grow them in Georgia, and they're beautiful in Georgia. Or, you know, not to pick on Georgia, but it's important to
– Or the big box stores.
Yeah. Or the big box stores, correct. Yes, but just to know, regardless of where you shop, know where your plants come from.
Right. And that segues into the other issue of invasives is that – or diseases. You know, there's diseases that are endemic to, like right now in Florida, which if you buy a tomato plant and they truck it up, that can be also carrying that disease up from Florida. Or a little beetle that right now is in Marathon County that's attacking the lilies could have came up on lilies that were shipped up from an area where that beetle is. And so that's how a lot of that gets spread around. And so you have to be very careful about where you're buying your products.
Well, we already have a caller, 1-800-780-9742. If you've got horticulture or gardening questions for our inclement northern climate with Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, let's go to Brenda in Rhinelander. Brenda, you're on Route 51.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I live along the river, and currently my lawn goes right up to the riverbed, and then there's my pier. And what I would like to do is plant a low-growing perennial ground cover that would be used as kind of a buffer between the lawn and the river. That it was that way when I purchased the home, and I'd like to kind of make it more natural.
And do you have sun or shade, or is it?
It's on the west side, so it gets the afternoon sun.
And is it a sandy coming up from the river, or is it clay?
Nope.
Or what kind of soil? Is it good soil? Or
it's good soil right now. The lawn does very well, obviously, next to the river.
Okay.
And it's, I would say that it's more probably on the sandy side than on the clay side.
So that would fit right in.
Brenda, first of all, I would congratulate you for thinking that way, because so often we do have manicured lawns right to rivers, and it's so important to have a buffer between that is more natural. Several native grasses might be a good, and you can get several things that are low growing and would still maintain that transition from a more manicured lawn to the river. A blue-eyed grass or even a flag iris might be good there. There's a water leaf, Virginia water leaf. Mm-hmm. Is a ground cover, but it's rather aggressive.
Right. The other thing I would suggest is that the extension, if you go to their website that they have for all their publications, it's called learningstore.edu, I believe it is. And they actually have publications of what they call shoreline plants. They've done all the research. They already know what will grow in your area, not in your area. It's all listed. And so if you can go there, you find the publication on shoreline plants, it would probably give you an entire list of that you could just choose from to put in there. And so then you would see what's available, you know, what you can buy, the cost, and all those kinds of things you can assess for yourself then.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Learningstore.edu.
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank
right.
you so much.
Brenda, you got some homework to do. Thanks so much.
Yes. All right. Bye.
And let's go back to the phones. We have Arlene in Rhinelander with a question about azaleas and deer. Arlene, you're on Route 51.
Hi. Two questions. One, I'm thinking of putting in either a rhododendron or an azalea bush, and I need to know for this northern climate. I know the bright lights, I think, might do it on the azalea. I'm wondering about rhododendron. And then, of course, the more important question is we do have a lot of deer around our place. And somebody told me they like both of those. Is that true?
Do you have any idea?
I'm afraid that you are right. They do like both. So you have a couple of choices. One certainly is that if you love the plant, I always encourage people, if they love something, to at least give it a try. And you can do a hot pepper spray on it just as it's starting to leaf out, and it sort of train your deer to stay away from it. So that's an option. Rhododendron, and particularly the Northern Lights series, so what you're seeing right now or will see soon in the Rhinelander area, that really hot pink and hot orange, that's the Northern Lights series of shrubs. So try those. Look for always be checking your growing zone. So that's the USDA hardiness zone. Zone 3 is the Rhinelander area, I believe.
Right.
And make sure that it's again, if you buy it from one of your local nurseries, it probably was grown to be hardy in this area. If you're interested in some things that deer don't like, I can give you a quick, a short list of things that I'm scanning a list, and I want to make sure I'm picking things that I believe are hardy for zone 3. I think summer sweet would be hardy by you. There's smoke bush, Carol Mackey Daphne. These are all shrubs that deer won't eat. Winterberry, I know, is hardy because I bought it in Rhinelander. there are a couple of viburnums that you might be able to try. Snowberry, it takes some shade. That's a nice one. Lilacs, blooming right now. They're beautiful. Deer stay away from them. As well.
The other thing is, if I went with the rhododendron or the azalea, what about location? South side, north, west, what?
They can tolerate some shade. So you can. That's one nice thing about rhododendrons is you can get them in a little bit of shade. So they probably... I have seen them in full sun, but oftentimes they just like that little bit of protection in the afternoon, you know, so if you can place it so that maybe it gets more of a morning sun, and then when that heat, real heat of the afternoon comes in, it's a little bit protected, that's probably the best location for it.
And how about the snowberry or winterberry as far as location?
The snowberry will take shade, at least part shade. So if you've got a northern spot, that I would say snowberry and the rhododendron. Azalea probably needs, as Lynn said, the morning sun. And snowberry will do fine in the other areas as well. It will just grow faster and spread a little bit more. That's one that's terrific for taking up space. The branches like to go along the ground and then root. So if you don't want it to take up a large area, make sure you keep the branches off the ground.
Do the leaves turn red on that in the winter, in the fall, or is that just the winter berry?
It's the winter berry does. Yeah, mm-hmm. Snowberry has white berries, and it has kind of a nice bluish green leaf. So the white berries persist, and the birds love it.
Yes.
Okay, thank you much.
Arlene, thanks so much for the phone call. 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to speak to our Master Gardener volunteers as we head into the Memorial Day weekend about your gardening or your horticulture questions, or you can put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page. And incidentally, if you go to that Facebook page, we now have a link to the UW Extension Learning Store page. So you can find a lot of information there. And Pat on our Facebook page asks about the practical side of why people garden. He says, or she says, can backyard gardens or small plots help to feed a family? Are there nutritional benefits to having fresh vegetables that you know don't have a lot of chemicals applied to them? And what are some high-yielding vegetables? So we have about 100 questions there from Pat.
Yes, a small, any size garden, even if you're growing in pots. If you have a patio and all you can grow are 2 tomato plants and a few peppers, the nutritional value of them growing right, you're picking them fresh, so they have the highest amount of vitamin content. You're growing them in your own conditions. So even if you go to the store and they say, oh, these are organic or these are naturally grown, you really don't know what the process was of how they got there. Whereas if you're growing them right in your own yard, you know exactly what's been done to them and exactly how they've been cared for. And it's the time element. They're not shipped anywhere. You pick that tomato and you eat it immediately. And so that's where the nutritional value of your own homegrown can really, you know, benefit you. And then along with that is just the mental aspect of having something that you've accomplished. You either grow, you put seeds in the ground and you watch them mature into those beautiful plants. And that can even be true of flowers. It doesn't just, but vegetables are fun because you can eat them and you can really, you know, associate with what you've done. So that can be a wonderful experience mentally to see that you've accomplished something and grown something.
And Pat asks about high-yielding vegetables. I think we could come up with a list about as long as your mm-hmm. arm.
Green beans are big. Peas have a lot of. Cherry tomatoes are a big one.
And with tomatoes, it's probably a good idea to choose a couple different varieties so that you have maybe some early blooming ones or early mm-hmm. fruiting and then later fruiting so that you have it for a longer season. I will just add, in addition to all the benefits that Lynn mentioned, the taste of freshly yes. grown vegetables is second to none. Everything tastes better. You think you're not crazy about store-bought broccoli, grow your own broccoli. You will love it.
For Pat, I can just speak from my own experience in growing peppers and tomatoes every year. If you're looking for a tomato plant, and it's a hybrid that does well every year for me and produces lots and lots of tomatoes, Celebrity is a really mm-hmm. good variety. Mm-hmm. And if you're looking for a sweet pepper, there's a variety called Gypsy, which is not a bell pepper. It's kind of a frying pepper or a salad pepper, mm-hmm. But it produces incredible quantities, and the peppers mature after only 55 days, which is a challenge in our northern climate.
Yeah. It is, and I just recently found a new pepper. It's called King of the North. And it has been bred to produce peppers even when it is cold, because a lot of times if we get nights below 70 degrees, which in Wisconsin is very common, the peppers will drop their flowers because it's too cold. Whereas the King of the North has been bred to not do that, so you get those peppers to be produced even in a cool climate.
Well, we are coming off another long, cold winter. We had a nice warm-up, and then just this past week, below freezing temperatures. In fact, I had some frost on the top mm-hmm. of my car this morning. I live in Merrill, a cold spot in Merrill. So we had below freezing temperatures and even snow up north this week. How is that affecting the spring growing season?
Well, again, it depends on what you are growing. Most perennials are used to the conditions that Wisconsin have, so they should be okay. If you've already put in some flowers or some vegetables, onions should be fine, potatoes would be fine. Some of the peppers and more warm season crops, I would encourage people to wait until maybe even early June mm-hmm. before they plant those. If you have fruit trees, Lynn can speak to this more, but if you have fruit trees and they were budding and we had frost, you know, keep an eye on them. That might affect the fruiting later in the season.
Lynn?
And that's very true. And that goes for strawberries. I know my strawberries were in full bloom, so we watered. Because if you water and the plants are wet, that helps them to protect from the frost. But that also, when you're purchasing any of these plants, like Nick was saying, if they're suited to this area, they're bred to be able to take a little bit more of that cooler spring. Oftentimes, they are hardier, they bloom later, those types of things. But anything fussy, eggplant, I wouldn't put it until way into June. Certain peppers, it has to be warm. You have to get warm nights. That's what's the big factor with those kind of vegetables. And we don't get warm nights in Wisconsin until very far into June.
How about the warmth of the soil? How important is that?
That's very important for those. For a lot of your seeds that you're planting, they won't germinate unless the soil is a certain temperature. And so if you're putting those in and it's wet, it's cold, they're just going to rot. Nothing's going to come up.
You know, that's just such a challenge because, you know, frost comes in mid-September and it takes a while for things to grow.
Right, right. But you'll find if you put your seed into warm soil, it'll pop right up. So you really haven't lost any time because if you've put it in cold soil and it's struggling, you're not going to get it anyway. And so if you wait till it's good and warm. The other thing some people do is they do put covers over their gardens to try to warm the soil up faster. Some things you can put like a circle around it of they call them water walls. That
wall
can
of
help.
Water, yeah. You can order those in gardening catalogs.
Mm-hmm. They have row covers that people put over. They're like a little hoop with plastic over the top, and that like makes a little tent. And that'll warm everything up. And then as soon as the stuff is up and we get warm temperatures, then you can take the tent off. And then everything's – you got a head start.
Well, we had another tough winter, and so we've got a lot of trees that suffered girdling damage from rabbits and deer looking for food. If you've got a tree that's been partially girdled, are there any precautions that you can take or remedies that you can take in order to try to save the tree, Lynn Kane?
That's a really hard one. You can try. You don't do anything. The tree will try to heal itself. So we used to tar things and do all that. And now, again, through extension research, they found that really doesn't help. You're better off to just leave it. Try and let it heal itself. Definitely get yourself some hardware cloth and get a good covering around that base so that no more damage is done. Nothing else is attracted to that. Hardware cloth has pores that, you know, it's open, little, so you can leave it on all year round. It doesn't matter, and you can protect that. I would recommend to anyone who's planting a fruit tree, get that hardware cloth on immediately to prevent that from happening, because we had a tree that happened. It lived for the whole summer, but then when the next winter hit, it killed it because it couldn't fight it off.
And the same thing happened to me last year. I had a tree that seemed to come back, and this year it's gone.
Right.
You know,
right.
1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to our Master Gardener volunteers, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. It's Garden Talk today, but just for those who live in the northern half of our state, we've got wide open phone lines. You can get through right now, 1-800-780-9742 if you've got gardening or horticulture questions. And put a comment on the Route 51 Facebook page if you're shy and you don't want to speak live on the radio, and I will read it live on the air. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We'll be back to talk about tomatoes right after this.
Ain't nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get your ripe ones, don't get hard. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forgot all about the sweating and the digging. Every time I go out and pick me a biggin'. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What would life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Contributors to Wisconsin Public Radio include Menominee Street Dental, Becca Cates, and Birch Creek Music Performance Center. You too can help ensure the future of WPR with your business sponsorship. Find out more at WPR.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Christine Bremer Moogley of the personal injury law firm Bremer and Trollope, committed to protecting the rights of accident victims throughout Wisconsin. Bremer and Trollope, because the right results matter most. Bremer-law.com.
Yes, you like potato, and I like potato. You like tomato, I like tomato. Potato, potato, tomato, tomato.
Let's call the whole thing off.
Oh, yes, you like potato.
And you like potato.
You like tomato.
Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald there are having a discussion about how to pronounce two of the favorites that we find in our gardens every year, and whether you pronounce them tomatoes or tomatoes, they have to be one of the most popular vegetables to grow. Lynn Kane, you've done some research on tomato blight. Can you share some of that with us?
Right. Tomato blight is a huge problem for a lot of gardeners. A lot of people give up on growing because every year their tomatoes die or they look horrible or whatever. And so what you have to understand is there's many kinds of blight. And there could be early blight, late blight, septoria leaf spot. There can be bacterial blight. So there's many, many things going on. One of the huge problems we have in our area is late blight because it comes in and it spreads to the potatoes. And as we all know, we're living in potato country. So this is a big issue. And when a lot of you see the spraying and things going on, which we're trying to avoid, but they're trying to avoid this disease because it can be extremely devastating.
And potatoes and tomatoes are relatives. It's hard to believe, but they are.
Yes, same family, Solanaceous family, and which also can include your peppers and your eggplant, also the nightshade weeds. So you're in your garden, you have your tomato plants, and they start to look bad. Then what you want to determine is what disease do you have. So if you have an early blight or a septoria leaf spot, those are things that when we recommend rotating your garden, moving your plants around in your garden, because these things can overwinter in your soil. So when you water and you splash the soil back up onto the plant, if you're using like a sprinklers or things like that, then you'll see that die from the bottom up. So the lower leaves start getting yellow spots, starts moving up the plant. So what you can do is put mulch down so that's not splashing. You can remove some of the lower leaves on your tomatoes once they get bigger to open up your airflow. Try to water them at ground level. Use drip irrigation or water them with a bucket and just not get the leaves wet.
Or just be careful with how you point that hose.
That's right, right, exactly. Now, late blight, that comes in on the wind. So what you're going to do, but it can also come in on transplants. Like Nick was saying, you're buying things maybe from Florida where they have late blight right now. That transplant could bring that right up with it. So that you want to watch. But late blight needs to have cool and wet. So we get that foggy late season kind of thing. Again, the university has a website. You can go and look at a map. They'll show you exactly where the late blight is. So you can watch it coming into the area. So once it's here, then you want to scout and make sure that you're not a carrier of that.
Where can people find this website?
You could go to, I would just call your local extension office. They'll direct you to the plant pathology department at the University of Wisconsin. And there's a professor there, Amanda Gevins. She's doing a great deal of work on this to try to prevent it from coming into our area. But fortunately, the newest thing is we now have blight-resistant tomatoes. And so then you don't have to worry at all because won't get it at all.
Yeah.
It will give you a very much of a head start.
Well I've seen disease-resistant tomatoes on the market for a long time.
Right.
Is there some new development, something new that's particularly resistant to blight?
It's a new – the disease resistant that we have now are usually for verticillium, which was a disease in tomatoes. There are other diseases of tomato. So far, nothing has been resistant to blights, early blight, late blight, septoria leaf spot. Now they discovered at North Carolina University a gene that they can have bred into these through breeding, natural breeding, not GMOs or anything like that, all natural breeding. And so they've produced these tomatoes that are now resistant to the actual blights.
Do you have a name of the variety?
The variety, there's Iron Lady is a variety that's coming from the company is called High Mowing Organics. So it would be all organic seed. But you can only right now get it in seed form. So you would have to grow them yourself. Johnny's Seed has a called Defiant. That's another one that's resistant. There's a lot of they have cherry tomatoes. They have Roma tomatoes. They have slicer tomatoes. So, again, contact your extension office or contact like the plant pathology department, that sort of thing at the University of Wisconsin, and they should have all this information that they could get for you.
Iron Lady and Defiant, but
are two of
you can only find them as seeds, and maybe it's kind of late, you know, to,
yes,
to start
yes.
a seed at this point.
It is. It is.
So
but
look
it's something
for them next
to keep
track.
Right, next year.
1-800-780-9742 if you've got questions about gardening or horticulture just for northern Wisconsin. We have a couple of Portage County Master Gardener volunteers, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, with us. And we do have wide open phone lines once again, 1-800-780-9742. You can get right through if you'd like to talk to our experts. Are there any large beefsteak-type tomatoes that do well in a short growing season?
Celebrity is one of the shorter season tomatoes. Better Boy and Best Boy are
the ones that you find everywhere.
Right, mm-hmm. Early Girl, find, yeah. Those are bred to be shorter day length. Usually, if you look on your tickets, they'll tell you. You know, it's important to read those labels because they usually will tell you, you know, how many days. Again, a lot of it is talk to your neighbors. If you go over and they're growing beautiful tomatoes, ask them what they're growing because they know what they're growing. And
there is a variety, a group of tomatoes that's just come on the market within the last few years called Indigo Rose. And these tomatoes are just beautiful, and they look like blueberries. You know, they're very dark blue, and then when they develop like red shoulders, then you know that they're ripe, and they have a lot of antioxidants and lycopene, and that's something that you can find in certain greenhouses, but not everywhere. And they're plants that I've grown for a couple of years right now, and they're just marvelous tomatoes, and they look unlike anything that you've ever grown before. But when you cut into them, even though they've got the blue skin, they're like a bright strawberry red on the inside. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend that you check those out.
Right,
Indigo
right.
Rose, if you can find a greenhouse that sells
right.
them.
Mm-hmm.
And do you grow them from seed? or
I have in the past, okay. Mm-hmm. And I didn't do seeds this year, so I'm mm-hmm. scouring greenhouses right now trying to find somebody right. who might be carrying them.
Yeah. And a lot of those varieties are the heirlooms. If you go to heirloom tomatoes and you find your heirloom plants, they will come in many different colors. A lot of them will have funny colors. You know, they're not the beautiful red tomato. That's been bred into those tomatoes to all ripen at the same time. But the heirlooms, you get the flavor because the flavor hasn't been bred out of them. So, yes, I would definitely recommend those heirlooms and colored varieties.
Well, we've got a question about heirloom tomatoes. Let's go to Patrick in Wisconsin Rapids. Patrick, you're on Route 51 with Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane.
Oh, thank you so much, and good morning. The question I have is, when is a good time, especially in this area, Wisconsin Rapids, Stevens Point, to plant from seed my heirloom tomatoes? Because I planted them this year, and I was a little late, but I've got them growing. I just pulled them outside to get some sunlight rather than artificial light. But that, and I just want to say that I just can't wait to get them all in. I'm doing nothing but heirloom this year. So that said, I'll let you take the answer.
Yeah, Patrick, what varieties are you growing, can I ask you?
Oh, goodness. I've heard. Now, I've got what's called Paul Robeson, and I heard that's a tough one in this state. I got Yugoslavia, Black Crim.
I've seen Black Crim at Fleet Farm. They sell them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I didn't know that until just recently. But
you know, that's one of the joys of growing tomatoes from seeds, isn't it, Patrick? Because you can get all kinds of varieties that you can't find anywhere else. And it's like every spring is an adventure. You can grow new varieties and see what works.
Yeah, and they can be as colorful as peppers, as variety peppers. Another good heirloom is stripey. I think it's chocolate stripey. So it's just beautiful. To answer your question, Patrick, about the best time to start seeds, there's through the ages. St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, has been identified as the best date to plant your seeds. Now, it doesn't have to be exactly that date, but research has shown that tomatoes that are 7 to 8 weeks or that have been started 7 to 8 weeks before you put them in the ground are most have the greatest success. And so if we're aiming for, you know, June 1st or shortly before that to get your tomatoes in, that would be about it.
Well, good. That's good to hear because I put them in like March 20th.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. And I got a good starter seed kit from Park Seed. It's a biodome, we call it.
Ah.
It really, really worked good. And I had a heat pad underneath. I did my homework, so.
Yeah, yeah, it sounds like it.
yeah, I can't wait. And it was, I'll let you go with that, and thank you very much, and enjoy the weather.
All right, Patrick, thanks so much for the phone call. And let's go to Grant and Lac de Flambeau. Grant, you're on with our horticulture experts.
Thank you. I've got a question about boxwood. So this is not a vegetable, but there are some places here in the area that are selling boxwood shrubs, and they're advertising them as being hardy to minus 30 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 30 below zero. And I have been doing a lot of research on the internet and can't find any type of variety that is hardy like that. And when I see a plant tag that says that it is hardy to minus 30, that tells me that it can be planted anywhere. It doesn't need to be planted up next to the house or anything like that. Are you aware of any boxwoods that are truly hardy to minus 30?
I would say no. I've seen those same types of things at stores where they sell those. What will happen is in a mild winter, you'll get away with it. But when you get a winter like last winter where we didn't get a lot of snow, or 2 winters ago where we got extended periods of cold weather, you're going to lose them. Or half of them are going to burn, or, you know, and they're not going to thrive like what you're looking for is in a boxwood. And so, yes, no, I would stay away from those. And you're very smart that you did your homework, because that, unfortunately, you see that with a lot of things at the stores, that even with, they'll say it's zone 4, and we think, oh, we're zone 4 in, you know, the central, but it could be zone 4 like growing down by Janesville or down by Madison, and up in this area you're going to get winter burn, or it's not going to flower right, or those kinds of things. So I always tell, if you're going to invest in a plant, especially a shrub or a tree, do a little homework and do a little background and see where it really wants to live.
Well, thank you. I have one more question. Is mm-hmm. there, if I may, is there a convention that is used when they say hardy to zone, say, 3 or to minus 30? Does that mean if it gets to minus 30 2 days out of the winter, then it's considered to be a zone 30 or a minus 30 hardy plant? Or when they say that, is there a guideline for how many days of the winter it can survive at minus 30? Is there anything like that?
In other words, could it survive, you know, maybe some plants could survive just a day or two where it dips down there, but if you've got a couple of weeks, it
right.
might be another story.
And the other thing is that's why that's kind of a deception right now. I would say when they tell you it's a zone 3 or a zone 4, those have set temperature ranges, those are set things by the USDA. When they're saying, oh, it's hardy to to a certain temperature range, that has no scientific background. That's just them saying something. So, and a lot of that can, it can be 30 below, but if you didn't get enough moisture or it's windy or there isn't any snow cover, right, that can all affect how a plant, you know, reacts. And so you can't just go by temperature when you're trying to determine if a plant can grow in your area or not. So you're always much better off looking at zones or, like you did before, do a little homework and really see what they're talking about.
Grant, thanks so much for the phone call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to talk to our Portage County Master Gardener volunteers, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz, that's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is the Route 51 Regional Talk Radio Annual Spring Garden Show. It's garden talk just for the northern half of the state. We'll be back after we tiptoe through the tulips.
Tiptoe through.
Supporters of Wisconsin Public Radio include Florentine Opera of Milwaukee, La Lingerie, and Mabel Tainter Center for the Arts, proud sponsors of WPR programs. Your business can join our ever-growing list of contributors. More information at wpr.org/sponsor. Support also comes from Northwind Renewable Energy of Stevens Point, designing and installing solar systems, highly efficient wood boiler systems, and providing deep energy retrofits to buildings. Northwind's project portfolio is available at northwindre.com.
Let me take you down, 'cause I'm going to Strawberry Field. Nothing is real, nothing to get hung about. Strawberry Fields forever, Strawberry Fields forever, Strawberry Fields forever.
Well, whether you're growing strawberries or blueberries or raspberries or tomatoes or potatoes or plum trees or apple trees, nothing is real? Well, it's real here, folks. We've got some real advice from our Master Gardener volunteers, Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz. We've got about 9 minutes left of the show. If we can squeeze in another call or two, if you'd like to get in line at 1-800-780-9742, 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is the Route 51 Regional Talk Radio Spring Garden Show. Garden talk just for the northern half of the state, where we have to put up with some very challenging growing conditions. Yes. Jim called us. He's in a car, and he's going in and out of coverage area, but he's curious about pear and plum trees that will grow in the Phillips area. He had a plum tree with big black plums like you find in the store, but he lost it, and he's looking to replace it. Lynn Kane, you're the expert.
Yes, well, I would say I don't know the specific variety names. Like I was saying, I deal with heirlooms that we have no idea what they are. But I would very much look at, you know, just go into your web browser or whatever, put in Zone 3 plum trees. They'll pop right up because those are standard things that you can look up. You can, again, call your local extension office. They should be able to give you a list of those plum trees that will grow in your area. Or go to a reputable nursery in the Phillips area that is growing those types of plants and look at the tags and look for Zone 3.
Let's talk about some new techniques for gardening, wooden pallet gardening. Nick Schultz?
I'm actually going to defer to Lynn because she has done this.
What I last year we did two pallets. One was we actually planted the whole pallet. So you take a pallet, you turn it to the back side, maybe add some extra boards for support if it's kind of a beat-up pallet, and then you put your cloth on there, like a weed fabric, something like that, to stabilize it. You go across the back and on the sides. Then you turn it to the right side. You fill it full of potting mix. So you want to get, you don't want to use garden dirt. It's going to be too heavy. You use like a compost or a garden soil, you know, like a Miracle-Gro, that kind of thing. You put it all in there. You pack it in. And then you plant in between the slats. But you leave it flat for at least 2 to 3 weeks to get those roots really growing in there to stabilize it. Then you can flip it up vertically and you'll have a nice vertical garden. And you water it, you know, and that in the, if you already have fertilizer in the soil, that should keep it fertile. Otherwise, you can use a little Miracle-Gro again. It's a nice way to grow things if you don't have good soil or you just have a small space.
Miracle-Gro potting mix is great, but it is expensive.
Yes, yes. But I also go and just buy the offshoot, the no-name brand, and I've found some very good soil. You know, you can just start with a little bag. In fact, they have one brand that's called Master Gardener, and that's one of my favorites because I am a Master Gardener. And that's great soil, and it's not nearly as expensive as the Miracle-Gro.
Well, let's go back to the phones. We have Dan in Rothschild. Dan, you're on Route 51 with Lynn Kane and Nick Schultz.
Good morning. I've got on my back hill a lot of hostas and ferns, and I would like some suggestions for some plants that I could add in there to put some color in there.
Well, I have a very interesting, I just found it's an heirloom impatien. And so impatiens, okay, again, like shade, and it's called balsam. So B-A-L-S-A-M. And it will self-seed, so if you want it to spread through there, so you'll plant it. And then it will self-seed, so it will continue to come back, and that will have flowers in it. Impatiens, of course, have flowers in them. Begonias kind of like the shade. I would assume we're talking shade since it's hostas and ferns.
Yes, yes, yes.
There's a lot of woodland plants that might grow. Is it kind of a woodsy area?
Yes, it is.
And so you can get some jack-in-the-pulpits. You can get some people are propagating some of the lady slippers and things like that. You can't dig them out of woods, but you can find a natural nursery that grows those type of woodland plants, trilliums, things like that, so that you can purchase them and then get them started, and then they will spread by themselves, and you'll create your own Virginia bluebells. Those are another one that, you know, you'll get some very pretty woodland flowers growing in between there.
Very good. Thank you.
If I can add, also in the perennial, shade perennial area, some of the early bloomers, lungwort comes in pinks and blues and whites, excellent, and it has very pretty leaves throughout the season too. But that will give you some early color because your hostas aren't blooming until a little bit later in the mm-hmm. season. Astilbe is a very pretty mid-season bloomer, sends up some stalks. It has a finer leaf, so that might look nicer with hostas as well. Monk's hood blooms later in the season. That's a pretty blue. So you've got some choices.
Good.
Dan, thanks so much for the phone call, and thanks to all of you who called in. We're almost out of time, but I want to touch on something really quickly here. There's a lot of concern that we're losing our bees due to colony collapse disorder, and Wisconsin particularly hard hit. Up to 60% of our hives are gone. Nick Schultz, are you encouraging people to raise bees? Is that something that people should look into doing? And if not, if we don't have enough honeybees, how do you pollinate the flowers?
If you want to raise bees, go for it, but recognize that it's a lot of work. So so anybody who's interested, I would encourage you to pursue some. There are several workshops and options for that. An easy way to encourage pollinators is to grow plants that pollinators love. And that can be anything from letting at least a couple of your dandelions go early in the season before you have flowers to asters and blazing stars. And anemone is blooming now. Milkweed is a great one. Butterfly weed, coneflowers, a lot of your native plants are attracting pollinators.
Start a wildflower garden.
Yes. Exactly. Yes.
Nick Schultz, Lynn Kane, thanks so much. We are completely out of time.
Inch by inch, row by row, gonna make this garden grow. All it takes is a rake and a hoe and a piece of fertile ground.
And we want to thank today's guests, Portage County Master Gardener volunteers Nick Schultz and Lynn Kane. A reminder, you can read Nick's column, The Perpetual Gardener, in the Portage County Gazette. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritger. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by Eric Clapton, Arlo Guthrie, John McCutcheon, Guy Clark, Louis Armstrong and Ella Fitzgerald, Tiny Tim, The Beatles, and John Denver. A reminder to follow us on Facebook. If you missed a portion of this program, you can hear it again in its entirety Friday evening, tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. on WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau. Thanks again for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week, we are heading out of town.
Mother Earth will make you strong if you give her love and care. Old crow watching home.